Bokir Tov. Good morning. Chanukah Sameach. Nice to see all of you. This morning I'd like to explore together with you the choice of the menorah as the official symbol of the State of Israel. And as we'll see, it was somewhat of a curious and controversial choice. Not so pashut. Now, the official symbol of the State of Israel, of course, is the menorah, flanked on each side by an olive branch. This familiar image, which appears here on the first side of the source sheet, in the middle there, was designed by two brothers, Gabriel and Maxim Shamir, who were from Latvia and studied graphics and design in Berlin prior to making Aliyah. And they were responsible for creating a number of symbols, emblems, medals, stamps, and even currency for the young State of Israel. And their symbol, their menorah, was adopted as the official emblem of the Provisional Council of the State of Israel on February 10th, 1949. As I said, the choice was the subject of much debate and discussion, as we'll see in a few moments. Now it's easy to understand why this motif was adopted as the official emblem of the State of Israel. You know, the menorah has long been a very central symbol since antiquity. In addition to its role in the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash, of course, and the Hanukkah story, which we're celebrating this week, you have images of the menorah or menorot that are found in Bate Knesset, ancient synagogues, cemeteries, mosaics, seals, and symbols throughout Jewish history. So the menorah is a very Jewish symbol. You know, people think of the Magen David as a Jewish symbol, but that comes later, actually. The menorah is a very old Jewish symbol. And in fact, you know, maybe some of you have been to Katsrin or other places in Israel where they have a site of a Byzantine synagogue. And how did they know it was a synagogue? Well, maybe there's a mosaic floor, but oftentimes you have a picture or an inscription of a menorah. There's a stone in the menorah. I was with my wife in Athens, Greece, a number of years ago. And in the Agora of Athens, which was the ancient center of the city, the marketplace, there is a synagogue, or there, according to historians, archaeologists, scholars, it was believed to be a synagogue there in the ancient Agora in Athens. And how did they know that there was a synagogue there? Because in 1977, they found this piece of marble with an inscription of a seven-branched menorah and a lulav, which is also another symbol you see in a lot of these ancient synagogues. The Arbat Haminim, it's another motif you see in mosaics, and it's another very Jewish symbol. And that synagogue is believed to be from the period somewhere between 267 and 396 CE. But again, and the stone is no longer there. It's in the museum. But how did they know it was a synagogue? How did they identify? They saw a menorah. It's Pasha. Now the choice of the menorah, flanked on each side by olive branches, is of course from the Chazon of Zechariah's vision of the menorah, flanked on both sides by olive branches, from Zechariah Perek Dalet, chapter 4, which we read on Shabbat Chanukah as the Haftorah, except this year, since Shabbos Chanukah is also Rosh Chodesh, we won't be reading that Haftorah, since it's Rosh Chodesh. But when it doesn't fall out on Rosh Chodesh, we read from Zechariah, and we read this vision of the menorah, very, very fitting. So what does Zechariah see here? Take a look at source number one. Okay. Vayashav ha-malach hadover bi. So the angel who was speaking to me came back to me. He returned to me. Vayireni ki'ish asher ye'or mishnato. And woke me up as a man is awakened or is awoke from his sleep. Okay, so Zechariah has this vision of this angel coming and waking him up. And this angel says to him, Ma ata ro'eh? What do you see? Va'omar, and so Zacharias said, Ra'iti v'hineh menorat zahav kula, v'gula al rosha v'shiva neroteha aleha, shiva v'shiva mutzakot la'nerot asher al rosha. I saw, behold, it was a menorah made entirely of gold with the bowls on top and the seven lamps, we'll talk about that, and seven branches. And what does he see? He continues and says, Ushnaim zeitim aleha, echad miyamin hagula ve'echad al smola. And I saw two olive branches, one to the right of the bowl of the menorah, one to the left. Okay, so this is the famous vision of Zechariah, and of course it represents this epic of peace, it represents redemption, and that is what Zechariah prophesies about. So it's easy to understand where they got this motif from and why it was adopted. But as I said, the choice of the menorah was not without controversy. If you take a look very carefully at which menorah they chose, it wasn't so problematic or controversial that they chose a menorah. A menorah, as I said, is a very central symbol in Judaism. But which menorah did they choose? Upon careful inspection, if you take a very close look here, it's on the first page of the source sheets, where they got this particular menorah from, okay? The menorah that they chose came from where? The Arch of Titus, right? Take a look at the bottom of the page. These are two pictures that I took when I was in Rome of the Arch of Titus, okay? The one on the left is a close-up of the menorah, and on the right you see a larger picture depicting the southern wall of the Arch of Titus, or the south panel, really, of the Arch of Titus. And you see that the menorah that the Shamir brothers chose for the symbol of the state of Israel is Dafka, the menorah of the Arch of Titus. Okay. So you can see why there would be some objection to it. Now, I don't know if there is any piece of architecture that is more painful to the Jewish people than the Arch of Titus. The Arch of Titus was built circa 81 CE by Domitian, brother of Titus, to commemorate the victories of his brother Titus, including his conquest of Jerusalem. And it's a living monument to the destruction of our Beit HaMikdash and the exile of the Jewish people from the land of Israel. And as I said, here in the south panel, and you can take a look at the bottom of the of your sheets over here, the south panel of the Arch of Titus depicts this victory march, really. You see Roman soldiers with celebratory wreaths upon their heads carrying kelim, vessels from the Beit HaMikdash. You see they're carrying the menorah, they're carrying the shulchan, they're carrying trumpets, chatzotzrot, they're carrying fire pans. And this, you know, infamous image is forever seared into our collective consciousness. It's very painful to see. Yes, I'm sorry. You're saying Ma'alin Bakodesh, right? Like according to Beit Hillel, that's why we light an additional candle each day. We are Mosif V'Holech, as opposed to Poched V'Holech, like Shammai. Okay, so that's a nice idea that maybe by choosing Dafka, the menorah from the Arch of Titus, we are somehow elevating it. We are somehow rectifying it. Okay, we'll come back to that point. That's a nice idea. We'll come back to your point. Okay? But you could see how this would cause the consternation, or this would be problematic or upsetting or controversial because of what the Arch of Titus represents. And it's a triumphal arch. Again, it celebrates the triumph over the Jewish people and Jerusalem, the Beit HaMikdash, and it's a model for triumphal arches around the world. If you visit the Arc de Triomphe in Paris, it's modeled after the Arch of Titus, okay? You know, everyone goes there and takes a picture. I'm guilty of that too when I've been to Paris. Takes a picture of themselves in front of the Arc de Triomphe, but it's modeled after the Arch of Titus. And the Arch of Titus, historically, maybe yes, with the founding of the State of Israel, maybe today in 5782, we can relate to the Arch of Titus differently. But historically, it was a symbol of our defeat. Very painful symbol. And it's interesting, Pope Paul IV, the same pope who forced the Jews into the ghetto in Rome, for those of you who've been to the ghetto in Rome, which now boasts about a dozen kosher restaurants, and they're all wonderful. When I was there with my wife, we tried in the few days we were there to eat at all of them. We didn't succeed, for better or for worse. Probably for better, we didn't succeed. But you know, now it's a major tourist site, and it's so nice to visit. But at the time, it was very painful. So this same Pope Paul who forced the Jews into the ghetto in 1555, he forced them to swear an oath of submission to the church every year at the Arch of Titus. There are also traditions that the Jews were forced to walk or pass through the Arch of Titus on Tisha B'Av, on the 9th of Av, the day when we commemorate the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And according to local tradition, this I learned from tour guides there, no Jew would pass through. Now you can't. Now it's part of the, you know, imperial fora, and it's, you have to pay admission to enter that area and to get close. And there are not gates, but you'd call it like a rope. There's a rope preventing people from passing through the arch. But it used to be people would walk through. It was, you know, like you walk in under an underpass or under a bridge or something. So historically, no Jew would pass through that arch willfully, because of what it represents. But on Chavtet of November, right, which we just observed 2 days ago, which was what happened on the 29th of November, 1947? The United Nations passed the partition plan. Okay, the Arabs did not accept the partition plan, of course, but that was cause for major celebration. And so on the following day, November 30th, just one day after the United Nations passed the partition or adopted the partition plan for Palestine, which would lead eventually to the establishment of the State of Israel. So the Jewish community of Rome, who would never go there, gathered together at the Arch of Titus. There's even a picture. There's a picture of the Jewish community there gathering at the Arch of Titus, and they marched through, but this time walking in the opposite direction. Walking in the direction towards Jerusalem as if leaving Rome and returning victorious to the land of Israel after 2,000 years of exile. So it is possible that, you know, with the founding of the State of Israel, and certainly in the decades since and today, with the confidence that we feel, maybe, and we'll revisit this idea in a few moments, maybe the Arch of Titus means something different. But at least back then, it was very painful. And so, you know, you see the direction that these Romans are walking in towards Rome with the Kelim from the Beit HaMikdash. And so the Jewish community gathers together and walks through the opposite way towards Yerushalayim victorious. When I was there a number of years ago, I'm standing there and I was reminded of a story about Rav Shlomo Yosef Kahaneman, who is the beloved head of the Ponovitch Yeshiva. Fortunately, his wife and his family were all murdered by the Nazis. He was one of the people responsible for rebuilding a Torah here in Israel following the Shoah. He rebuilds his yeshiva, the Ponovitch Yeshiva. And a story is told that he was in Rome raising money and asked his driver to take him to the Arch of Titus. Now, people were surprised. He wasn't one to visit tourist sites. He wasn't one to go on tiulim. He was very focused on Torah and on building, rebuilding Torah. But he asked to be brought to the Arch of Titus. So, of course, they acquiesced. They brought him to the Arch of Titus. And according to the story, he stood in front of the Arch of Titus, shaking his fist and crying out defiantly in Yiddish, "Titus, Titus, Vubis du, where are you? Titus, Titus, where are you?" In other words, here we are still alive. Am Yisrael Chai, and you are long gone. You are but a memory, but a footnote in the history of the world. You are just part of the dustbin of history. And so I decided to do a little something to maybe the embarrassment of my wife. I handed her my cell phone. I said, here, please videotape this. And in front of the Arch of Titus, said it was an overcast and rainy day like today. It was in February at the time. There weren't so many people there, but there were some Jewish tourists around along with other tourists. And so I'm standing there and I start singing Am Yisrael Chai at the top of my lungs. And a security guard quickly ran over and he's yelling at me in Italian and he's shaking his fist. And well, I don't speak Italian, so I feigned ignorance, pretended like I don't know what he's talking about. And I continued to sing. To finish the song and you know, until he really got in my face and started yelling at me. And I asked our tour guide after, what was he saying? He was threatening to have me arrested, to call the police. Okay. But that was my small act of defiance. It almost got me arrested, but I think it was worth it. In any case, the menorah that was chosen for the symbol of the state of Israel is clearly the menorah of the Arch of Titus with all that it represents. And for the chief rabbi at the time of Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, I was in bad taste, to say the least. And we'll see in a moment why he objected. For Rav Herzog, most problematic is the base of the menorah. Now, Rav Herzog, he strongly objected to the choice, and he believed that, you know, beyond the fact that maybe it was not in good taste choosing a menorah from the Arch of Titus with all that it represents, he had a problem with the menorah as depicted in the Arch of Titus and questioned whether that is indeed the menorah from the Beit HaMikdash, as others did as well. And most troubling for Rav Herzog is the hexagonal base of the menorah, which appears on the arch. You take a look at it, it has this two-tiered hexagonal base, right? And the problem is that while the Torah doesn't tell us exactly what the base should look like, Rashi here in source number 3, based on a Gemara in Menachot on Daf Chafchet Amud Bet, says that the menorah had a three-legged base, not a hexagonal base. So is this menorah here really the menorah from the Beit HaMikdash? Okay, how could it be? Now, if you take a look at Sefer Shmot, where the Torah describes the construction of the menorah, again, unfortunately, it doesn't describe the base. As we'll touch on in a moment, it also doesn't describe the shape of the branches. Right? What does it say there? If you look in Parshat Truma, the Torah in Shmot Perek Chafei Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Exodus chapter 25, verse 31. Excuse me. It says, Vasita menorah zahav tahor, you should make a menorah of pure gold. Miksha te'aseha menorah yirecha v'kana gvieha kaftoreha ufracheha mimena yiyu. Its base, its shaft, its cups, its knobs, its blossoms shall all be hammered out of gold. And then the Torah continues, six branches, three on each side, and then there's a center branch, and it has these bulbs and these cups, the kaftor v'aferach, what exactly that means. So what's very difficult is that the Torah doesn't really tell us how the menorah should look, and so we have certain things described in the Talmud, in the Gemara, but there are a lot of things that are sort of left up to the imagination. It's interesting, there's a famous midrash that Moshe Rabbeinu himself was unable, somehow he was unable to envision the menorah, to be able to fashion it. That's why he needed to call in some experts some craftsmen, some artisans like Bezalel and others. And now that midrash is often understood to mean that the menorah is something that's beyond human comprehension. It represents things that are beyond our understanding. You know, perhaps mysticism, mystical ideas that are wisdom that is way beyond our human understanding, our comprehension. But in any case, as I said, the Gemara in Menachot and Rashi here on the pasuk I just read for you in source number 3, Rashi writes, where I've underlined, Ushlosha Rigalim, or Raglayim, rather. Raglayim, I guess. Shlosha Raglayim Yotzin Heimena Ulamata. Okay. It had a three-legged branch. Now, this menorah doesn't have a three-legged branch. So Rav Herzog suggests that it is possible that maybe something happened to the original base of the menorah on its way to Rome, and that the Romans created this hexagonal base, or they replaced the original base of the, or covered it up with this hexagonal base that appears on the Arch of Titus. That's one suggestion. Others would suggest that no, this is not the menorah from the Beit HaMikdash. It's an artist's rendering. Okay. What was really problematic, beyond just the three-legged branches or the three-legged stand, what was very problematic for Rav Herzog is if you look very closely on the base of the menorah, as it appears in the Arch of Titus, you've got all sorts of beasts and mythical creatures depicted. You've got dragons and griffins and sea creatures and lions and eagles, symbols of what? Avodah Zarah. More like, well, that's interesting, Shlomo's throne, okay, which has depicted, had all sorts of animals. But we'll see in a moment that according to the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, if you find a vessel with a dragon on it, that vessel is problematic. Okay, we'll see in a moment. So, and it's, you know, it's understandable why you might find eagles. The eagle was the symbol of Imperial Rome. It was the symbol for many centuries of the Roman Empire. Okay, but what about these mythical creatures? For Rav Herzog, it was inconceivable, not possible, that a menorah stood in the Holy Temple with those images. Why? Rav Herzog drew on the Mishnah Avodah Zarah that appears here in source number 4. The Mishnah there says in the third chapter of Masechet Avodah Zarah, Hamotzei Kelim, someone who finds vessels. You're walking around, you're digging, and you find something. You find some old kli. Hamotzei Kelim ve'alehem tzurat chama. And on it, there's an image of the sun. Tzurat levana, or an image of the moon. And where I've underlined, tzurat drakon, or an image of a dragon. Yolichem liyam hamelach. The mission instructs that you have to toss them into the Dead Sea. Why? If you find a vessel with a sun, a moon, or a dragon, what does that say about that vessel? What was that vessel used for? It was obviously used for idolatry, Avodah Zarah, and therefore, there's an Isur Hana'ah. You cannot get any benefit from such an item, such a kli, and therefore you have to toss it into the Dead Sea, where no one ever is going to find it. So there are a lot of dragons in the Dead Sea. Now, so for Rav Herzog, it can't be. Now again, it's possible that this indeed was the menorah, except that they changed the base, as Rav Herzog and others suggested, from the three-legged base. You can imagine, you know, if you've ever, I don't know, used a tripod, and not the best quality tripod, let's say, for a camera stand or a musical stand or something, or a microphone stand. Tripods aren't always so sturdy. So you can imagine if they're schlepping this thing from all the way from Yerushalayim to Rome. And by the way, we know that these vessels were in Rome. As the Roman historians record, they were displayed in Vespasian's Temple of Peace. I know the name is quite ironic. You can see they just maybe a couple of decades ago discovered where his Temple of Peace stood. It was subsequently destroyed when Rome was destroyed and sacked many times. But they have the marble, original marble floor I saw, along with some of the columns from Vespasian's Templum Pacis, Temple of Peace. And I mean, it's fascinating. You have Roman historians describing how Vespasian displayed these treasures from Jerusalem. Are they still there? Are they somehow buried in Rome? Were they taken to Africa? All sorts of speculation where the vessels from the Second Temple are today. But are they in the catacombs underneath the Vatican? Is the Vatican hiding them somehow? All sorts of speculation and intrigue, all sorts of wonderful stories of rabbis claiming they visited or have treasure maps. Most likely these things, also like Titus, are, you know, long relegated to the dustbin of history because Rome was sacked and destroyed a number of times. So, you know, most likely these things are gone. But in any case, it's possible that this depiction is indeed the menorah that stood in the Beit HaMikdash, except that they changed the hexagonal base. Others suggest that no, maybe this indeed is the menorah of the Beit HaMikdash and shows the influence of idolatry during the Second Temple period. I mean, that of course is what we are celebrating this week. We're celebrating the victory over Hellenism, over, you know, what the Greeks tried. They didn't want to kill us, at least at first. They just wanted us to be like them, to dress like them, to speak like them, to think like them, and to worship like them. And, you know, people think that Hanukkah is this victory of us versus them, Jews versus Greeks or Syrian Greeks or Seleucids. And not so black and white. It was really Jew versus Jew. If you look at the books of the Maccabees and Megillat Antiochus, etc., if you look at the history, you see that it was Jew versus Hellenized Jew. And we know that in the Second Temple period, there was a lot of corruption and a lot of foreign influence. So it could be, Rabbi Dr. Daniel Sperber, in his Minhagei Yisrael, suggests that these beasts, these mythical creatures, these dragons on the base were copied directly from motifs found in the Temple of Apollo at Didyma. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Didyma in southern Turkey. So there could have been influence on the Jews at the time. We really don't know. We really don't know. But Rav Herzog was bothered by these images. Now, what's interesting is that the Shamir brothers, who lifted, if you will, the menorah from the Arch of Titus, while they didn't address Rav Herzog's concern of the three-legged base, it would seem that they anticipated outrage, if you will, or concern over putting mythical creatures and dragons and these types of things. And if you look carefully at the emblem of the state of Israel, instead of these mythical creatures and beasts and eagles and such, the eagle representing Rome and, you know, and these dragons and these idolatrous animals and things, these mystical creatures. So they represented them just as kind of squiggly lines. So it's as if the Shamir brothers anticipated this concern. And like they used what my kids call couscousaya. You know, they kind of obscured those images. But clearly they're borrowing from the menorah of the Arch of Titus. Now, the truth of the matter is, you know, we can get into it and split hairs, but I don't want to spend too much time on this one topic. But the Gemara, actually the Tosefta and the Talmud's Bavli and Yerushalmi get into different types of dragons and you know, what types of dragons are permitted, what forms of dragons are prohibited. We're splitting hairs. Clearly, it's, you know, if that was in the Beit HaMikdash, it shows foreign influence. But as Herzog and others suggested, it could have been a later addition. It also could be not necessarily the menorah from the Beit HaMikdash, but a menorah. Right? It's possible that it's some other menorah not necessarily the menorah that stood in the temple, or some have suggested maybe one of the menorahs in the temple, right? But if that hexagonal base with those mythical creatures was on it, you know, it raises some eyebrows and presents us with some questions and would seem to suggest foreign influence. But as I said, you know, the Talmud debates as to what types of dragons are permitted to draw and what types are idolatry. In any case, others have suggested that maybe it's just an artist's rendering of what the menorah looked like, that it's not necessarily a faithful depiction of the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash, but it just, you know, an artist is using his artistic license. You know, an artist has certain latitude to be creative, and it's an artist's rendering, lav dafka, in actual depiction, and perhaps an artist influenced by, you know, the motifs in the Temple of Apollo in Didyma in southern Turkey, but lav dafka, the menorah that stood in the Beit HaMikdash. So all sorts of speculation. By the way, before we get to something that Rav Herzog wrote, there were others as well who questioned whether this depiction is the menorah of the Beit HaMikdash based on the shape of the branches of the menorah. And Rav Yosef Kapach, who is a very important Yemenite scholar, Yemenite Talmud Chacham, who published, in addition of the Rambam, based on Yemenite manuscripts, they had very authoritative manuscripts of the Rambam, along with a commentary on the Rambam, along with, he published many things on the Rambam. Together with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, they believe that this cannot be the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash. Forget the hexagonal base, but the branches. As I said, the Torah doesn't tell you how to fashion the branches. The Torah said there should be 7 branches, 3 on each side, a branch in the middle. When you kindle the menorah, you're supposed to kindle the lights facing the center branch. The Torah talks about the bulbs and flowers, the kaftor of a ferach, etc. But the Torah doesn't tell you what the menorah should look like in terms of how the branches should be fashioned. Should they be straight branches or should they be curved, like here in the Arch of Titus? Doesn't tell you. The Mishnah and the Gemara doesn't tell you. Right? So even Chazal don't talk about this. However, if you turn the page to the second side, at the bottom left, this is a picture that was drawn by the Rambam. This is the Rambam's own hand, Ktav Yad Kodesho. This is from a manuscript that resides in the Bodleian Library at Oxford University. And this is from the Rambam's Perush HaMishnah to Masechet Menachot. Okay. And you see how the Rambam draws the menorah, right? With its branches. They are straight branches. They are diagonal. If you've ever seen a Chabad menorah, and they're all over, you don't have to go too far to see a Chabad menorah. They're all over the world. They fashion their menorah just like that, with these straight branches, okay? Based on this manuscript of the Rambam, based on this drawing that the Rambam himself did, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe felt very strongly that that is how the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash looked, and therefore our Chanukiyot, right? Because the menorah the 7-branched candelabrum of the Beit HaMikdash, our Chanukiyot, our 8-branched menorah, which we light each night of Chanukah, should be fashioned on that. It should look like the menorah that stood in the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore should have straight branches. It's not three-legged. Well, you don't really see the base. It could be, it's not clear. It's not. The Lubavitch one is not three-legged. So that's interesting. That's interesting. You're saying, yeah, if they're going to try to make it to look like, that's a good question. I don't know why that is. Yeah. Again, maybe a three-legged menorah isn't very sturdy. Maybe it needs a more gezinta branch, or a gezinta stand, more stable stand. They could do better. Well, in any case, it's possible. It's not clear from the drawing. And, you know, the Rambam, while he was, one of our greatest scholars and a philosopher and, the great eagle, the Nesher HaGadol, Rambam wasn't necessarily an artist. So some even say, well, okay, the Rambam drew this, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be completely straight. I've heard different explanations given to how to reconcile the two images. But for those who question whether the Rambam actually drew this, the son of the Rambam, Rabbi Avraham ben HaRambam, okay, Maimonides' son, Rabbi Abraham, he, in his commentary to Sefer Shemot, writes that the branches of the menorah should be straight, as my father of blessed memory had drawn. So he attests in his commentary to Sefer Shemot about this drawing, that this drawing is authentic. He said that the branches should be straight, as my father drew. Okay, and not round, not like an arc shape, as others have depicted. Okay, and that's why for Rav Gafich, the Yemenite scholar who had these manuscripts of the Rambam, many manuscripts of the Rambam, he inherited from Yemenite scholars, the Temanim preserved the authoritative and authentic Rambam, and for the Lubavitch Rebbe, the menorah depicted in the Ark of Titus, the Arch of Titus, cannot be the menorah from the Beit HaMikdash. Again, you could say, well, maybe the artist just was, chiseling it there based on his imagination of what it looked like, or based on other depictions of the menorah. And maybe it was a different menorah. Others say, no, the menorah of the Beit HaMikdash did have rounded branches. And you see many, many depictions of menorot. As I mentioned, the menorah appears in synagogues, in ancient cemeteries, and on coins even, okay? Even on a coin that was minted during the last Hasmonean king, okay? So you can imagine the Hashmonaim who restored the service in the Beit HaMikdash and kindled the menorah, purified the temple, kindled the menorah, the Nes Pach Hashem, and the miracle of the oil. So we have a coin from King Antigonus II, Mattathias, who died in 37 BCE. Okay, so this is still during the Tekufat Bayit Sheni. It is the Second Temple period. And you have a coin from the Second Temple period, from the period of the last Hasmonean king, which depicts a menorah with round branches. Right? And if you take a look here at the bottom of the second page, here's just a mosaic from the floor of the Byzantine synagogue in Tsipori. Many of you have probably been there, which is from the beginning of the 5th century, Beit Knesset HaTik B'Tsipori, and you see a menorah that it has round branches. And many, many other depictions, and this is already a lot later, but many, many depictions of menorot that are round branches. But most compelling is this coin, which was minted during Tekufat Bayit Sheni, which has a menorah that has round branches. And we have other inscriptions and carvings and depictions from that same period where the menorah has round branches. So, it's not clear. And as I said, I've heard different explanations of this hand drawing of the Rambam in his Perush HaMishnah to Masechet Menachot, where they try to reconcile the two. And so maybe the Rambam, he was using a ruler or something very hard to evenly depict round branches, and based on his study of geometry and other things, I've heard all sorts of creative explanations and apologetics why, even according to the Rambam, the menorah had round branches. In any case, we'll have to wait, Mirtzah Shem, for Eliyahu Hanavi to come and reconcile this and to tell us how to build the menorah. Although the Machon HaMikdash, based on their research, they paskin, if you go into the old city, you see the large gold menorah that they built, and that is made with round branches, just like you have in this depiction here. So they paskin already. Okay, so in any case, you could see why there was a lot of discussion and debate with regards to the choice of the menorah from the Arch of Titus. I mean, the chutzpah. Okay. And Rav Herzog, who was the chief rabbi, he made his opinion known. He raised his objections publicly. And here at the top of the second side, this is from an article that was written by Rav Herzog and published in 1956, where he deals with the choice of the menorah from the Arch of Titus. If you take a look up on the left, this is a picture of Rav Herzog himself standing there at the Arch of Titus in Rome. And Rav Herzog writes the following. Take a look at the second paragraph there on the right side. After he voices his objection to the choice of the symbol of the state of Israel, and they took the menorah from the menorah of the Arch of Titus, chutzpah. And he talks about the three-legged base, which we mentioned, and he talks about the hexagonal base with its dragons and griffins and mystical creatures. And he talks about other concerns. He writes the following, Yotze mizeh, what emerges from this, shelo tov ose memshaltenu hayom hazeh. It's not good what our government did in adopting the menorah from the Arch of Titus as the official emblem of the state of Israel. Kishezachinu shuv orashel Tzion, hamisumelet ben menorah. Now that we've merited to return to the light of Zion, which is symbolized by the menorah, shehi mechaka dafka et tmunat hamenorah shebakeshet Titus. That the symbol that they chose is dafka, the menorah. They could have chosen any menorah, but they chose the Shamir brothers lifted the image of the menorah dafka from the Arch of Titus, asher kanire chaluba yidei zarim, which, as it appears, was created by foreigners. Okay, v'sheina kula altarat hakodesh, and it's not the menorah which was created, altarat hakodesh. Again, Herzog believed that the menorah which appears in the Arch of Titus is not our menorah from the Beit Hamikdash. Can't be. Our menorah had a three-legged base. Our menorah could never have had those idolatrous dragons and griffins and things on its hexagonal base, or on its base. So he says that she'ena kula altarat hakodesh kemosh muchach mitorat Rabbeinu Moshe Gaon Hagaoni Zal, and it's not the menorah which was completely created in holy purity from the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest of all geniuses, and from the other Torah sources, other authentic Torah sources that we have from the Torah scholars over the generations. The Lozo Bilvad, and not just that, Ella, Sheid Lefanai, Adam Mumche B'Yidiat HaKadmoniot, and he puts in parentheses, archaeolog, and not only that, but I had an archaeologist testify before me. Now, it's interesting, Rav Herzog, we know, was a very open Torah scholar. He himself had a doctorate before becoming the chief rabbi of the state of Israel. He had a doctorate. His doctorate is on the Tchelet. He was investigating the royal blue that we use in our tzitzit and in the clothing of the Kohen Gadol and the Kohanim. So there are a number of instances where Rav Herzog writes about him consulting with other scholars beyond just the Dalet Amot of the Beit Midrash, so to speak. A number of weeks ago, we spoke about the history of the Jewish community in Ethiopia. Well, as I mentioned, when Rav Herzog was asked about the pedigree of the Jews of Ethiopia and their status, and if they would require conversion, Rav Herzog consulted with sociologists, anthropologists, historians. Okay, so here he says, I spoke with an archaeologist, and he testified, Shaminorot ha mitsuyarot al hakvarim bakatakombot shabaromi, that the menorot that are depicted on the graves in the catacombs of Rome, and there's this whole area, the Appian Way, it's called, where you have these Jewish catacombs in Rome. I was there. I didn't go inside. I'm a Kohen, but I was there. And you have actually in the museums in Rome, you can see some of the gravestones and grave markers from these ancient graves, these ancient Jewish graves, these ancient catacombs. So he says, this archaeologist testified that on the graves of these Jewish graves in the catacombs of Rome, Kulan Benot Shlosh Raglayim, tripod, I guess, they're all depicted with three legs. Again, for Rav Herzog, as we said, that hexagonal base is a problem. V'chein kol menorot ha-mitzuyarot b'fasifasim shel sridei batei ha-knesset ha-nimtzayim be'eretz Yisrael. And so too, the menorot that appear in the mosaics in the land of Israel. And here at the bottom of the page, there's a picture from the ancient Beit Knesset. It's a Byzantine Beit Knesset in Sipori. And you could see, in addition to the rounded branches, which you mentioned, look at the bottom. What do you see? A three-legged base, a tripod. Okay. Uledati kol ze barur v'sharir v'kayam. Right. For Rav Herzog, this is all clear. This is all clear. Obviously, the menorah depicted in the Arch of Titus is not the menorah from the Beit HaMikdash, or perhaps it could have been that the base, at least, could have been added on later for Rav Herzog. Or as others have suggested, no, maybe it's just one of the menorot from Yerushalayim, maybe it's another menorah that was in the Beit HaMikdash, but not the menorah. Maybe it's the artist's rendering using his imagination, taking certain artistic liberties, a creative license, different explanations. But Rav Herzog objected to the choice of the menorah from the Arch of Titus to represent the state of Israel on its official emblem. And you can understand why. Now, later in the 1950s, actually in 1956, when the Parliament of the United Kingdom on April 15th, 1956, gifted the State of Israel that large menorah that appears at the entrance to the Knesset in honor of the 8th anniversary of Israel's independence. Again, there was some dispute and debate and some controversy, but this time for a different reason. And Rav Herzog objected to that for a different reason. As the Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah says, you are not allowed to depict a menorah. You're not allowed to fashion a menorah outside of the Beit HaMikdash. The menorah belongs in the Beit HaMikdash, right? Now, how did the Machon HaMikdash get away with making a menorah? Okay, they made it for the Beit HaMikdash. But you can't make a seven-branched menorah to put in front of your Knesset or even to have in your home. Because, no, that's supposed to be for the Beit HaMikdash. That's seven-branched menorah. So that's why we call, as Reb David, your son was saying, your wife told me, your son was telling either your parents or was it your in-laws, when they were saying, oh, you're going to light the menorah? They said, no, we're lighting the Chanukiah, right? You have to make a distinction. The Chanukiah is an eight-armed candelabrum, an eight-branched candelabrum. The menorah is the seven-branched candelabrum that belongs only in the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, so Rav Herzog later was upset that they put this seven-branched menorah in front of the Knesset. Eventually, he writes that it's acceptable. He writes why it's okay. But initially, there were rabbis, among them Rav Herzog, who was upset at the choice. Now, as we saw, Rav Herzog was very unhappy with the choice of the menorah lifted from the Arch of Titus as the symbol of the state of Israel. But what's interesting is that, you know, there were other rabbis and authorities, even in the religious Zionist world, that we're less bothered by it. And, you know, over time, it became accepted. You know, Rav Herzog's opposition, if you will, fell on deaf ears. He was a das yochid, you might say, on this. He didn't have other rabbis voicing their objection. And, you know, quickly, this controversial new emblem gained acceptance. And in time for Israel's Independence Day, the religious Zionist newspaper, Hatzofeh, which was a precursor to the Makor Rishon, if you all know the Makor Rishon, which is the religious Zionist newspaper, before the Makor Rishon, you had the Hatzofeh, which was really wonderful. I've been through many issues of the Hatzofeh on microfilm. I've gone through the microfilm of these old gilyonot, these old issues of Hatzofeh, and doing research at the National Library, and wonderful Torah articles from the great rabbis of the time discussing halachot now that we've returned to Eretz Yisrael, important halachot now that we've returned to Yerushalayim. So the Hatzofeh newspaper took that new emblem, this symbol, with the menorah from the Arch of Titus, and they put it right on the cover of one of its supplements, and they had no problem. And again, over time, this symbol became acceptable. The Arch of Titus got koshered, if you will. And this is something that you raised at the outset of the shiur. You know, for some, the choice of the menorah, dafka from the Arch of Titus, yes, dafka from the Arch of Titus in Rome for the newly created state, was symbolic and meaningful. But for centuries, that image was so painful. It represented the Churban HaBayit, the destruction of the Holy Temple in Jerusalem, represented Galut, exile. But following the Hakamat HaMedina, following Israel's independence, following the creation of the state, that very same image took on new life and new meaning. Now that we've built a state and returned home to Yerushalayim, people viewed that image with a newfound sense of hope and even victory. And what's fascinating is that the menorah from the Arch of Titus, dafka from the Arch of Titus, as well as other images invoking that famous relief on the south panel of the Arch of Titus, the images of the Arch of Titus begin to appear on Jewish book covers and on monuments and in religious art following the Hakamat HaMedina. And there are many examples of this. There's a member of my shul in Har Nof who was very active in the student struggle for Soviet Jewry. And there's now a whole archive at Yeshiva University, and he was interviewed, and there's pictures, and there's all sorts of very fascinating material. And among them, you have, at least during one of their demonstrations, okay, for Soviet Jewry, they're marching in New York City, and they're reenacting the image of the Arch of Titus, right? They're reenacting it. Now, you know, for centuries, chutzpah, how could you do such a thing? It would be too painful. But again, with that Hakamat Medina, the images of the Arch of Titus took on new meaning. And I think, you know, this is what you're saying, that maybe dafka with the Hakamat Medina, yeah, it's not so painful to lift the menorah from the Arch of Titus. Maybe there's a certain symbolism in that very act of taking the menorah dafka from the Arch of Titus and using that as the official emblem of the state of Israel. In one word, gotcha. In one word, to summarize our class this morning, gotcha. And with that, we will wish you a Chanukah Sameach.
Thank you.
Yeah.